This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is A Time Not Yet Forgotten, A Time Before Hope. This is a Trafford book publication. Our author is Billy J. Morris. Billy joins us from Germany. Hi, Billy. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Excellent. This is a work of science fiction. Am I understanding that correctly?
It is. It absolutely is science fiction.
Set 5,000 years ago. Tell me about it. What motivated you to put this book together and to come up with this storyline?
Well, writing is something I've wanted to do forever, and I just couldn't actually sit down and pop out a book. I've tried a couple times, and so what started this book is I'd actually started what I believe is the second book of this, and I got stuck, and so I went back to try to unstuck myself, and I ended up with a book.
So you are actually pulling together the characters and trying to get their background and get an overall view that readers would adapt to and latch onto.
Correct.
And tell me about the story. What is it about?
Well, like you said, it starts out 5,000 years ago, and basically it's about this alien race that harvests the Earth every 5,000 years. And so when they harvest one, they feed the other. And so 5,000 years ago, they harvested Mars, and that's where the book starts out at. And I do the prologue on that, and then I come into the first chapter, and it's into the modern time. And there are a few people left on Mars from the last harvest, and they decide they want to try to help the people of Earth, same as the people of Earth had tried to help them before. And so they send one of their own to Earth to try to figure out where our technology is, our politics, and stuff like that. And so that's where the story really starts to pick up. And so we're a couple years before the harvest begins. And so I try to describe in there an opening in the universe, because the way the universes rotate, that the two galaxies align at every 5,000 years for 100 years. And so in that 100 years, it's a much quicker route. And so they come and completely wipe us out and restart the harvest process on the other planet.
Explain the term harvest. There's two ways I could look at that. I'm looking at either food or people.
Right, they're looking for slaves and warriors, not necessarily people. And so they're completely dependent upon the slaves and the warriors that they would gain from such a harvest.
And what happens to these aliens when they arrive on Earth?
Well, their technology is just a little bit better than ours, and so they basically they have invisible ships, and so that's the one technology that we're not to the point of. And so when they come in, they completely obliterate our defenses and stuff, and so they've basically beaten us before we've had a chance.
Curious about the title, A Time Not Yet Forgotten, A Time Before Hope.
The Time Not Yet Forgotten, originally I was going to do it as somebody telling a story in the future, and so I kind of changed from that, but I still like the name, Time Not Yet Forgotten. And so then the second part of that, A Time Not Yet Forgotten, A Time Before Hope, is a little bit of a hint about how the story is going. And so at the last two chapters in the book, it talks about what hope is. And so hope is hope, but it's actually also a city on Mars. And so this is set in a time before hope, a time before this city.
Would you consider this a mystery in its undertones, or is it more than that, an adventure?
It's an adventure with a little mystery in it. I mean, I've got the characters Michael and Gabriel, and there's a little mystery in there and of what the aliens are actually planning, but it's more of an adventure, I would think. There's some mystery in it, but more of an adventure.
Who would your book appeal to, and why? What age group are you targeting?
I would like to think it appeals to my age group, the 44-year-old males who have grown up with science fiction, and it doesn't have a lot of the big gadgets and gidgets that might appeal to the younger. I mean, I think it's a very good story that could appeal to anybody, but I'd like to think it appeals to people who have been raised the same as I was on science fiction and just looking for some new science fiction.
And describe the process. How did you come up with this storyline? How long did it take you to put it together?
The parts between Mars and Earth, that was my original basis of the story, and so that was pretty quick. And then the development of the characters, I mentioned, like I said before, Michael and Gabriel before, and originally in my book, Michael was only going to be just a character that was mentioned, but I needed to put him in perspective, and then as I wrote him to add some history to him, I decided that I wanted to make him a main character, and so I ended up doing that, and I'll probably continue that now in the second book. And so I needed a counterbalance to Michael, and so that's where I came up with Gabriel. The main male character, Lucas, I mentioned him as the father of the main character in the second book, and so that's where I came up with him. And so that was basically the purpose of going back, is to tell his story.
A lot of stories are turned into movies, and especially the science fiction genre. Is there a scene in here that stands out that would make a great movie trailer?
I like the scene where the ships crash on Mars, and they're trying to survive, and they can't figure out why the ships are crashing. And one ship has completely nothing wrong with it other than the problems it had getting to Mars. And then all of a sudden, the other ships are falling, they're afraid to land, they're running out of supplies because they hadn't packed right, because the way they didn't find what they expected there. And so the whole series of chapters in there with the ship's crash is probably by far my favorite.
How would you introduce this to someone who doesn't know of your writing?
I'm not sure that I think introducing, just flat out saying, hey, here's my book, would you like to read it, kind of thing. I'd like to think the title would entice people to read it. I mean, if not the title, at least reading the back of it. I'd hope the book could introduce itself. I mean, that's what I would, even to my friends, I've never actually said, here, read this book, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've left the book where people can see it and ask about it and then introduce it.
And discover it on their own. The cover is very eye-catching.
I do like the cover. It wasn't exactly what I wanted, but it did turn out well, I believe.
Are there others in the marketplace similar to this, or do you think your book has enough difference to make it a standout?
I think it has enough difference to stand out. I mean, I didn't base it on any characters or any Star Wars or Star Trek or anything like that. I do use some common words like the Federation, but that it's not in any way a similar Federation to what's in Star Trek, and so I believe I have an original cast of characters, an original kind of invasion. I mean, most invasions you see is like Independence Day. It's a 2-day battle, or Signs. It's probably a week and a half type thing. But this is it's an invasion that's over years, and so the story spans. It starts out in 2025 and ends up in 2050-ish somewhere.
This sounds like a challenging effort. Anything that was difficult for you to overcome in writing this?
It was difficult. I mean, it took me 12 months to write it, and another 6 or 7 months to edit it. And I spent every day working on it, and every day working on it. And the most difficult part is 13 months down the road, when you're trying to write something, getting the details to come out, and having to go back and see if your memory matches what you thought it did.
Would you call this book character-driven or story-driven or adventure-driven?
That's a good question. I think it's story-driven, but I think it has a good build of characters in it. I mean, I think I've done a decent job building the characters and setting the scene, but I do think it's story-driven. I mean, it is the story of this invasion, and it starts out probably 70 years before the invasion and ends up about 20 years before the invasion.
Any underlying theme or message that you are trying to get across besides just a good story?
I think it was purely just a good story. I don't think there's any underlining message. I mean, if there was, it's more of some things are we can control and we can plan for, and some things we not. But if it has any tone of that, it was just the way it came out.
Now, Billy, in looking over your material, I get the impression this may not be the last of the books in this series.
No, I actually plan to do another one. I'm probably about halfway through the second one in this book. And if I have enough material, I may do a third, but at least the second book. And so in the second one is A Time Not Yet Forgotten, A Time for Faith.
I love your titles. They're very uplifting and positive.
Well, thank you.
Wonderful idea. Great read. A Time Not Yet Forgotten, A Time Before Hope. Our author is Billy J. Morris. Thank you, Billy, for joining us.
You're very welcome.
How do we get copies of your book?
Well, it's on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I can give you the ISBN number. It's 978-1-4669-8147-8, and that's the softback. And then the hardback is 978-1-4669-8149-2, and that's the hardback. And then it's also available in the e-book, which is 978-4669-8148-5.
Are there other books in your future?
I am almost done with a fantasy that I call Shattered Fate.
I look forward to hearing about that book when it's completed.
I'm hoping to finish it by the end of the year. That would be a really good thing if I finished that by the end of the year.
Well, congratulations on this book and best of luck in the future. We look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you very much.
For Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi everybody, this is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station. Yes, why don't you look at the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on toginet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you. Here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Am I Pretty? And the author is Lindsay Burke. And Lindsay joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. And this interview is brought to you by Archway Publishing. Hello, Lindsay.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Great to have you with us. And this topic about bullying, especially how it affects young people, is prevalent today, it seems, and your story is just another great message to all of us. and especially as we're trying to help our young people to understand how important they are, and it's all about what's on the inside. But boy, that is hard in a society that all the emphasis is on the outside.
That's true, and it seems like the bullying is just either we're more aware of it or it's just starting earlier, because that was certainly my experience.
Yes, I think we've all had experience, no matter what our age, with bullying, but it just seems to be more prevalent, and it's probably, as you've already mentioned to me, about the technology today. We're just so much, there's so much communication about, we're so connected to all kinds of opinions.
Yeah, it's hard for kids to get away from the bullying if, when they go home at night, they still have a cell phone or their Facebook account or Twitter where they can see that kind of cyberbullying all the time.
So tell us a little bit about your background and how this came about, how the book came about.
Well, I was a preschool teacher for almost 10 years, and during that time I had my daughter Julia, who also came to preschool with me. So she was in a class separately from the one I taught. And there seemed to be a focus every day on what she would wear, and it became more powerful throughout the year, and I kept trying to take the focus off what she looked like or what she wore, and I realized that some of the other girls in class weren't letting her play with them if she didn't look a certain way. So I was trying to diffuse that, and I found it really, really difficult to manage. You know, how do you teach a four-year-old? You shouldn't care about the outside. It's just what's on the inside that matters.
So she's real happy, wants to go to school. She loves recess. But in your book, all of a sudden, the big confrontation, at least for how old of a girl is she in the story?
She was four, and some of the other kids were five, okay. So it was a little bit of the older ones.
So she gets confronted at the sandbox. Tell us about that.
So she's told that to be in the club, you have to have nail polish on. And instead of being really outraged by that, she kind of believed the girls. And so what drove me crazy is she'd come home from school and want to paint her nails. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? You're 4 years old. You don't have to do anything to play in the sandbox.
Hmm. But obviously very serious. And this is a serious problem for a four-year-old.
Yes. Yeah. She really wanted to fit in, and you know, what she didn't understand was every day she went back, the rules would change on her. So she was never going to get in the sandbox. And so instead of focusing on the outside, I realized we needed to figure out how to keep that small part of her, you know, her appearance, in perspective. And that's when the idea for the book came in. And I realized as I talked to other moms and friends about this that a lot of them were dealing with the same issues.
So it has a simple narrative, obviously, for children. At the same time, the illustrations are just bring the whole book to life.
Yeah, I think Susan Shorter did a phenomenal job with the illustrations. That really gives it life.
So in your experience with preschoolers, with your daughter, with this issue, how do you help a child to understand that as much as they want to be accepted, maybe these young people really aren't their friends? That's a hard one.
Yeah, I think for preschoolers, you need to do a lot of role playing and talking through that. And if that means I need to be the bully and then Julia can practice using her words with me, then that's as simple as it can get. Just really walking through those scenarios. Or, you know, I've been able to talk to her about experiences when I was little, and that gives children the feeling that they're not alone and that really everyone goes through this at some point in their life, and it's not a personal attack on who they are.
And that phrase that you just mentioned, use your words, is critical to get the feelings out in a hopefully in a kind way, not in a reactive kind of angry way.
Right, right. Yeah, you
That's
can be
a
very
hard
matter
one.
Of fact.
I mean, adults don't do a very good job.
No,
that.
It's terrible. I think we're all practicing. And even friends who have read this book, they said, gosh, as an adult, I can use this message. And as we're all aging and getting older, it's remembering what's really important.
Right. So The book, is this the beginning of a series on bullying and or other topics?
That's a really good question. I have ideas in my head, but I think I really want to focus on this one right now. I believe in the message. I really want parents to understand, you know, the punchline of the book, which is teaching kids that pretty is just too small a word to describe you. They're pretty smart. They're pretty kind. They're pretty brave.
Hmm.
They'll always be so much more than pretty.
Right. Well, that's well put. So it's a visual tool to help parents talk to their kids. I mean, that's what's great about this book. We can read it together and then maybe bring up the question, has anything like this happened to you at school?
Right. I mean, the kids love repetition, and this kind of starts the conversation.
Am I Pretty? That's the title of the book, Lindsay Burke. We've been listening to her. She is the author. Tell us how to get your book, Lindsay.
It is on archwaypublishing.com or on Amazon.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to you by Archway Publishing.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Musings of a Lifetime Bible Teacher. And the author and the Bible teacher is Larry Blacketer. And Larry joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Larry.
Well, good morning to you.
Well, great to have you with us. You've been teaching since you were, since you were 25, the Lord has provided a class for you, and it's been a great responsibility. I know you are humbled by that, and you also are challenged by it. And so through the years, through these decades, you've learned a lot, tremendous amount, and you have a lot of questions and about the way often pastors teach today. And the real bottom line teachings of the Savior, as you call him, the master teacher, and this is what you say about your book, this author has a passion for finding common everyday events to illustrate biblical passages. In many cases, such events in our lives serve to shed light on additional beautiful and sometimes overlooked truths. So that's, I guess, what you're focusing on, those things that we often overlook.
That's correct. Yeah, those are the ones that intrigue me the most. You know, through the years, I guess I've heard thousands of sermons and thousands of lessons. But then when I'm teaching, there's always seem like some little scriptures that, for whatever reason, are overlooked. And so those are the ones that seem to intrigue me the most.
And so you filled your book with those after decades of teaching. How did you become a teacher so young?
Well, I guess I'd have to classify myself as a religious, spiritual person. I was born with that gene. Evidently, it's part of my DNA. And I really had no choice. I was born into a Christian home, and my mother and daddy took me to church every time the doors opened. And as a young teen, I dedicated my life to the ministry. but not the preaching side, but for the religious education and the music side, and set my sights on Baylor. And school was actually pretty easy to me. My math teacher got a scholarship or a grant or whatever for me to go to Yale as an engineering student, and I just didn't have no part of it. I was going to Baylor, and I was going to study for the ministry. And anyway, that's pretty much how I got started, I guess.
You say you look at passages in the Bible through different lenses and from different angles, not to contradict conventional wisdom, but just to add another dimension to it. How did that, where's that come from?
I guess I'm just a naturally curious person. When I run across in the Bible, say a list, when you get to the list, you say, let's skip on to the meat of the thing and forget the list. And yet God put that in there for some reason. And so it really intrigues me to find out, what is that list for? Who are these guys? What did they do? How come they were, listed in God's scriptures for all eternity? And then I noticed some words that you see in the Bible, such as leaven, or palm trees, or springs, or wells, and stuff like that. And they're mentioned a whole bunch of time, but it doesn't give the significance of them necessarily. And I know that there's going to be significance. God doesn't put any gratuitous words in the Bible. They're all there for a reason, and so they just intrigue me. And then sometimes it seems to me like various commentators and scholars change words, such as in the creation where God said, let there be animals or let there be fish. It didn't say that he created them, and that was back, they were created in verse 1. And so the word let means to allow or not to hinder, and let it happen, sort of like an egg developing from a ball of seemingly void, shapeless matter, and evolving from there into a living, breathing earth. And God created the egg and then allowed it to become a living, breathing earth. And it had within it all the DNA, all the elements in order to produce a living, breathing earth. And so then after creation, he said, let it happen. Let this phase happen. Then let that phase happen. Then let that phase happen. And I've never heard it preached that way. Another thing, too, is day one and day two and day three. It's hard for me to say that they were 24-hour days because the sun and moon didn't come into play until the fourth day, So to me, day one, two, and three were of indeterminate length. And God sort of explained it when he said in the second chapter, he says, these are the generations of the day that God created the earth. Mm. And then another place it says, to God, 1,000 years is as a day, and a day is 1,000 years. And the great and terrible day of the Lord is 7 years long. We pretty well have that established. It's just, everybody wish it was a 24-hour day that are right in the middle of it. So anyway, to me, that we're just looking at it through a different lens. I don't want to contradict others. I just want to see it through a different lens.
I like the way you approach this, Larry. You call yourself a common man with this uncommon message, and you're asking you're asking questions and answering them from your own point of view, from your experiences, and this way you think. And like you said, it's in your DNA. Especially, I think today, so many Christians feel so helpless and feel like, how could God use them to do something great? And yet, we all know the Bible's filled with great heroes that at the time seemed pretty insignificant, didn't they?
Oh, they really did. As a matter of fact, the ones that would be considered the scholars of the day, such as the scribes and the Pharisees, he wasn't able to use them. And rather, he used common fishermen and a common tax collector. And Gideon was called himself the least man of the least tribe. And God said, don't think that way. I'm fixing to use you for something great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonah was a rebellious, no good
right.
evangelist, and God used him for the greatest revival in the history of mankind, I guess. So,
and then, of course, there's that little shepherd boy, too.
Oh, yeah, that little shepherd boy. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah, that became the greatest king that ever lived. Yeah.
I've often thought about how I would have, at his age or even at my age today, to have that kind of faith to face this enemy and this overwhelming, obviously, a soldier of beyond comprehension, a Goliath, and to face him on the battlefield all by himself. And, of course, we all have Goliaths in our lives that we have to face, and yet sometimes we don't think that we can face them, and we don't look to God.
Isn't that the truth? We just, for whatever reason, try to walk by sight rather than by faith.
Well, and, let me ask you a few questions. Let's just kind of open your mind and heart up a little bit more. Some might say, why do you suppose God always seems to be late? Some might ask that question.
They do. And I've asked it a number of times, but then I found out that God is just, he's always asking us to wait, to have patience. And I think the reason for that is in a situation like in Lazarus, rather than go immediately and keep him from dying or going immediately and raising him from the dead, he made them wait until all hope was gone. And then that's the arena where God can come in and say, you can't blame this on anything else. You can't give credit to anything else. I raised Lazarus from the dead. He was already gone so long he was beginning to stink. And I proved my power over that. And that just seems to be the nature of God. And so many of our prayers, you know, we want them answered right today, but God just doesn't answer them today. He waits until we know that that's God. Nothing else worked. I took medicine. I went to the doctor. I did this and that, and nothing worked. And then God healed me.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way he works. And
so you have a group of chapters you've already mentioned about the creation of the heavens and the earth. You have another group of devotional chapters that you say are very practical and have various vulnerable areas of our physical bodies. Tell us a little bit about those chapters.
Well, in those chapters, I just took the thing in Ephesians where it's talking about put on the whole armor. And so many times we spiritualize that, but there is a very physical thing insofar as God, with these various items of clothing, was identifying the areas of our bodies. Like, for instance, our brain. Satan wants to take over our brain. So God said, here, put on the helmet. And Satan wants to steal our heart. And so God says, here, put on the breastplate. And God wants to, actually, Satan wants to steal our sex life. He wants to cause us to do ungodly things with our sex. And so he said, put on a girdle to protect that sex life. Put on shoes to protect your feet, to protect where you walk, the way you walk, so that you don't stumble and fall into. So anyway, in doing that, God was, to me, was describing the battlefields that we go through in our physical life, where he says, here is here's some armor for that particular party life, and here's the fabric from which it's made. The helmet is salvation, then it gives us the sword of the Spirit, so that we not just defend ourselves, but we can be offensive people. We can go to Satan where he is, and with the sword of the Word, and Jesus used his own battle with Satan, because they got into a sword fight, and Satan had quoted scripture, and then Jesus would counter it with another scripture, and then, you know, that was just, and I've had this kind of a situation on several occasions where I was working with a Jehovah's Witness, and he sort of got me cornered one day, and I quoted some scriptures that just came out of my mouth that I could hardly believe that they came out of my mouth after it was over with. And I said, that was just God talking through me. And the Jehovah Witness was left that faith, and he and his wife, and they both came to a Christian church. Not because of what I said, but because of how God used me with the sword of the Spirit to win that battle. And that was strictly God. That wasn't me.
Well, the sword has a double edge to it, obviously can cut through anything, especially our own preconceived notions and habits and deceptions that we buy into. You also talk about, there's another group of scriptures. We don't have time to go into all these now, but you have another group that introduces us to the running buddies, you call them, who were accompanying the Apostle Paul on a hazardous journey, and you go into, how they became his teammates and illustrate the traits of each one. You also have devotional type chapters describing various events in our lives, which provide interesting, memorable pictures of our Lord. So this book is loaded with all kinds of out of the box kind of thinking.
Yeah, I was sort of interested visiting with another radio interviewer, and he said, so this is a book that I could actually put in the bathroom, and it has a number of little short things I could read then. And he said, for the most part, that do that instead of reading the sports page. You know, I thought that was sort of interesting.
That's right. Really benefit for time well spent, you know.
Yeah, and they're just 5 to 7 minute chapters, you know, and there's about 55 or 60 of them in there. And all of them are standalone, so it's, you don't have to put the book down in the middle of something and forget what you read. I mean, they just all are little standalone chapters. And to me, they're, so many people think that the Bible is a negative book, thou shalt not this and thou shalt not that. But, to me, the Bible is a very positive book, and it's a how-to book, how to live a happy, successful life, how to avoid the pitfalls, even the thou shalt nots. If you bring that up today and say, thou shalt not walk out into a path of an 18-wheeler, or thou shalt not walk into a burning building, those are not negative. Those are positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's telling you, don't do that or you'll get burnt, you know. And he's not going to punish you for that. Of course, nature will punish you for it. If you get run over by an 18-wheeler, it's going to hurt, you know. But God didn't do the punishing. The 18-wheeler did.
That's right, yes. And he's trying to keep us, like you say, have an abundant life and have a happy life. That's why your book is called The Musings of a Lifetime Bible Teacher. That's the title. We've been listening to Larry Blacketer. Larry, tell us how to get your book.
I guess like any book, they're available online at Amazon.com, or they can be ordered through Westbow Press itself, and then they can also be ordered through nearly any bookstore, such as Barnes & Noble, and I'm currently working on a website that I should have within the next week or so up and running, where they can order a signed copy from me, Great. And it's either by my name, you know, that'll take you to the site, or the name of the book, and that'll take you to the site. And anyway, there's just a number of ways. A lot of people seem like signed books, and right. So we're trying to make that available to them.
Well, thank you so much, Larry, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, thank you, sir.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.